The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Inside the Beltway on this Friday. Good morning to you. Now, the Mossad is the intelligence agency of Israel, and it's legendary for what it can pull off. And there is a large oil refinery in Tehran, or the outskirts of Tehran, that has been burning all night. And there's the largest ship in Iran's fleet that sunk yesterday in the Gulf of Oman. So I'm beginning to wonder what's going, you know, maybe the new, there's a new head of Mossad, and maybe when they come in, they get to pick a couple of projects. We have a little tape from his presentation to President Rivlin in Israel when he got the job.
Mr. President, I'm not saying we wouldn't get our hair mussed, but I do say no more than 10 to 20 million killed, tops, depending on the brakes.
It's not really that bad. 11 people were injured in the Iranian fire. Everyone got off the ship that sunk. I'm just saying. And Mossad doesn't answer to the president of Israel. I know. I'm just having some fun with you on a Friday. Let's run through the news before we get to the commentary. I have a new Washington Post column that has exploded online called the it's about the inner ring in Washington, D.C. What headline did they give it? The sad self-importance of journalists. I don't pick the headlines, but that's what the headline writer picked. And it's among the most popular things at the Post today. I'll get to that. Afghan war enters more brutal phase as U.S. troops begin pullout. What a surprise. The Afghan government troops don't want to get killed, so their rules of engagement are slightly less secure in terms of civilians than the United States overrides on their rules of engagement. President Biden is backing up. He's throwing things out of the plane as it gets lower. The boat is sinking and all the ballast is going overboard. He's trying very hard to get something, and so he's dropped his demand for a tax hike on corporate America. He did a good thing yesterday, expand the President Trump order banning U.S. investment in Chinese companies linked to the military or surveillance technology. More than, I think, 29 companies or 59 companies. I haven't got the exact list on the blacklist, but this prohibition on Americans investing is a big one. It's a good thing. And it reflects the fact that President Biden agrees with former President Trump that the mass incarceration of mainly Muslim ethnic minorities in the Xinjiang region is genocide. 59 companies, that's the exact number. The Biden administration is banning Americans from investing in 59 companies in China where defense and surveillance technology is manufactured. I already told you he signaled flexibility on taxes for infrastructure. According to the Washington Post, that means he's in retreat. Karl Rove has a great op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. Yes, it's still the economy, stupid. And Karl's always right. Go read that. Meanwhile, global food prices post biggest jump in decade. We're waiting for employment numbers, as they always come out on the first Friday of the month. We are expecting a gain of 650,000 jobs. We were expecting a large gain last month that did not show up. So who knows about this month? Well, that comes out about early morning some places. Global food prices, however, according to the Financial Times, are spiraling. 40% surge in cost of agricultural commodities. 40%. It's a closely watched index. Now, nothing to worry about inflation here. Not at all. Why central bankers could no longer agree how to handle inflation is the story in the Financial Times as well. And the answer is because they want to be liked. So you can always print money and its after effects don't actually catch up with you for 9 to 12 months. And we're now beginning to see a quicker acceleration of recognition given the vastness of the amount of money in the money supply. Modern monetary theory, MMT, holds it doesn't matter that the government can endlessly purchase its own debt. Not true. Google fired the chief diversity executive after they discovered he was anti-Semitic. Good for Google. D- Due diligence is usually done before someone gets announced as the chief diversity officer. Colleges are requiring COVID vaccinations from people, but they won't accept any doses by Covaxin, an Indian manufacturer. I don't think they ought to accept the Chinese vaccines either, which have been proven highly inefficacious. The idea of colleges requiring vaccination, that is not to me controversial. My guest yesterday, Dr. Peter McCullough, we have an extraordinary number of downloads of my interview with him over at The Interview with Hugh Hewitt on iTunes, Spotify, the Salem Podcast Network. Go forth and listen. I understand my friend Gallagher used it for his show prep yesterday, and that's fine. I would say listen to the whole thing. Breast cancer pill reduced recurrence, death in early stage patients. This is great news because early forms of aggressive breast cancer are very difficult cancers to battle. And this new drug by AstraZeneca and Merck reduced the recurrence of breast cancer in women with this early and aggressive form of the disease. It's a long-running international study, and it's great news. A scientific adventurer and China's Batwoman are under scrutiny. You think there's a big story in Vanity Fair, and because Vanity Fair is beloved to the left, many people are running to it and saying, look here, the Wuhan lab, it might have leaked, which is actually what Senator Tom Cotton said on this show 16 months ago, in which I repeated throughout the entire year. Look, you don't have to be a genius. You just have to know the Chinese Communist Party, WIV, is in Wuhan. The market theory has been disproven. They won't let anyone go inside of it. Ergo, the Chinese Communist Party is lying. Ergo, there was probably a lab leak. It was not. Once the lab was there, and we have a rare escape, they were doing gain-of-function research at that lab. That was well known. The automatic and instant rejection of the theory of leak by the left and the left in the media. So the left has two branches, in the Democratic Party and in the media, and they combine to denounce that. And there's a left in academia. They didn't want that theory out there at all. They called it racist. They condemned President Trump. They condemned Senator Tom Cotton. But it was Cotton who was first at the bell. He was on Senate Intel Committee. He was on this show telling people about it. Others like Josh Rogan and Jim Garrity echoed me in agreeing that it was simply persuasive. And F. Lee Bailey, Flea Bailey, my dad called him, died at 87 yesterday. I saw him in trial in Warren, Ohio. I don't remember the year Willie Head was on trial for murder. He worked at GM Lordstown and shot and killed a scab. Local counsel Sammy Pektovich had arranged with Denny McClain to plead him guilty to second-degree murder because he didn't intend to go to work that day and kill a scab or go to the strike that day and kill a worker crossing the line, but he did. And F. Lee Bailey got flown in by the UAW to try and defend Willie Head. I think that was his name. It's in the 60s sometimes. I can't remember it very well, except because I was interested in the law and I was a little geek, I asked my dad, who was a well-known trial lawyer in a small town, can I watch F. Lee Bailey? He's famous. This is before O.J. Simpson, but after Dr. Shepard. And he said, let me see. I'll talk to Judge Denny. And Denny McClain said, sure. And he put me in the jury box, next to the jury box, in a chair. So there's a 12-year-old kid sitting next to the jury for the whole trial. I went every minute to watch F. Lee Bailey. I came home one night, and my dad said, how's it going? What do you think? And I said, well, I can't hear Bailey. He said, what? You're 12 years old. You can't hear? I said, no. He drops his voice like this. And, you know, people do that on the radio. The radio blinks off. And I'm sitting next to the jury, and I can't hear him. And my dad, who has had a trial lawyer's voice, could not believe that F. Lee Bailey was making the number one sin and not projecting, but he was being overly dramatic. Willie Head was convicted of first-degree murder. I don't know what happened to him, if he died in prison, if he eventually got out. They did not have three strikes and you're out. They did not have life with parole in the 60s, as far as I can remember. He was not sentenced to death because, I mean, again, this is a good lesson to you. If you're in trouble in any city in America, don't hire outside counsel. Hire the former prosecutor who knows everybody in the prosecutor's office. It's the key line out of Tom Wolfe, Bonfire of the Vanities. I got deposits in the Favor Bank, says the lawyer to the Wall Street wizard. I got deposits in the Favor Bank, and I made a withdrawal. And that's how the criminal bar works with their buddies in the prosecutor's office. Don't ever hire an outsider. F. Lee Bailey dead, famous for being famous at some point. Then my article, which I'll get to later in the show, The Sad Self-Importance of Journalists, is over on the front page of the Washington Post landing page. It draws on the inner ring, and it was a result of reading Twitter for a long weekend when I was alone with a dog and seeing how many Beltway journalists wink at each other about how important it is to be a Beltway journalist. And I thought, this is just C.S. Lewis's The Inner Ring. And lots of you like it, many of you hate it, but it's true. Because I wrote it. Don't go anywhere, America. I'll be right back. The Hugh Hewitt Show is on its Friday weekend, rounding into the weekend. Stay with us. Welcome back, America. Hugh Hewitt on a Friday. That means it's time for the official movie critic of the Hugh Hewitt Show, who is simply awash in airline miles, which is what we pay him, Sonny Bunch, who is co-host of Across the Movie Aisle. And Sonny, you've arrived. I'm trapped in clickbait. In other words, during the break, I went to Trend Chaser because the headline got me, which is 40 near-perfect, near-flawless movies. And on this list are, among others, The Assassination of Jesse Jones by the Coward Robert Ford, Mulholland Drive, Manchester by the Sea, and a movie I don't even remember, You Were Never Really Here. I mean, do you ever look at these lists, or have you steeled yourself to be impervious to them?
I try to ignore lists. Just in general, unless I am making the list, because my lists are perfect, Hugh.
Well, of course,
I should. Internet's lists are bad, so I don't want to subject myself to bad things.
I wish you would do a list of movies to watch, but tell me, is there anything for me to go see in the theaters this weekend?
Wait, you don't like The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford?
I don't remember it.
Yeah, it's a Western. It's like a neo-Western starring Brad Pitt as Jesse James, and it has Casey Affleck in it, who, you know, won an Oscar for Best Actor a couple of years back as the guy who wound up assassinating him. It's a long movie. Some might say boring movie, for sure, but it is also shot by the legendary Roger Deakins, so it is a beautiful looking movie. So I recommend people check it out if they're into a Western.
I also don't remember You Were Never Really Here with Phoenix or somebody in
Joaquin
it. I don't
care. Yeah. I don't like that movie as much. That was
a
critical darling. It was
off my list. So what can I go to see, though? I mean, I'm tired of these movies on the little screen. There's got to be something.
Q, are you, I have to ask, are you an AMC stockholder?
No, I am not.
Stock before it went up 3,000% or whatever?
No, I unless it's in a mutual fund, no, I do not, because yeah. I don't invest. There are smarter people than me. It's like movie critics. I don't do movie criticism because they're real movie critics, and I don't do investors because there are really investors.
Well, I ask because if you are a shareholder of AMC, AMC is very excited that you're buying its incredibly overpriced stock right now. Because what they are doing is they're offering a popcorn dividend. If you're a stock owner of AMC, you can go to the theaters and get some free popcorn. So it's the most expensive. It's even more expensive than regular movie theater popcorn right now, because I think the price is last I checked, it was up to something like $35 a share.
Did you read what their prospectus stated when they issued the new stock yesterday? By the way, our stock market price doesn't reflect underlying value. It reflects a bunch of kids in their underwear in the basement trading on Robinhood. They didn't quite say that, but it was close. Yeah. And so they're just taking the money and running. Good for AMC.
Well, they're not wrong. I mean, so I just looked it up. The stock is still at $45 a share, which is up from a pandemic low of $2 a share, at which point AMC was underpriced. At $2 a share, AMC was underpriced. And then it bounced up a little bit in the first round of Reddit memeing to, you know, around $10 to $11 a share. And that's closer to what the proper value is, I think. And at one point on Wednesday, I think it was up to $71 a share, which is just crazy. That is crazy. But what AMC has done is something very smart. They offered several new rounds of common stock.
Yep.
And when they did this, the hedge funds that they, you know, owe debt to, the bond holders who they own debt to. They sold them the stock. The bondholders immediately sold the stock at this enormous markup to folks on Robinhood, who snapped it up immediately. And, you know, long story short, AMC has been able to write down another $500 million in debt.
They're brilliant. It's a smart move. If people are going to be stupid, you should be smart about their stupidity. That's a good move.
So they're clearing their debt. They're like talking about buying distressed assets, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if they're going to do that, but you know what they're doing is they're lengthening their runway. AMC is essentially, you know, buying themselves time by doing this, and you know they may not need that much more time. You know, we had a pretty big weekend at the box office last weekend with A Quiet Place Part 2, which did $48 million over the three-day weekend and $58 million over the four-day weekend, which is essentially a normal pre-pandemic weekend for a movie like this. It probably would have done a little bit better than that without the pandemic, without spacing, et cetera, but the fact of the matter is that that's a very, very good weekend, even in the before times, even in the long, long ago. So this weekend is a little bit dry. We had Cruella last weekend and the A Quiet Place Part Two. So this weekend there is not an exclusive new movie, but there is a new Conjuring film, Conjuring Part Three: The Devil Made Me Do It. I have not seen it, and Hugh, I know you're not
into that's a
horror
movie hard
of
pass.
This sort. So hard pass. I figure we can skip that. Which means we're at home again. We're at home again for another weekend trying to figure out what to watch. I quite enjoyed, I don't know if you watched this, Hugh. Did you watch The Mayor of Easttown on HBO Max?
I did not. Guy Pearce,
among others. I quite enjoyed this show. So the show follows Mayor, M-A-R-E, who is a female detective who is trying to solve both a missing persons case that's been on the books for a year and a new murder that occurs at the end of the first episode. And it's basically very reminiscent of a European crime drama of the sort that is very popular on Netflix and that sort of thing. It is compulsively watchable in the sense that every episode leaves on a mild cliffhanger until you get to the end where everything wraps all up. But it's really very, very good. Kate Winslet does a fantastic Mid-Atlantic Baltimore / Philadelphia / Rhode Island accent in this. She's very good as the titular mayor. I highly recommend it. It's very good. It's very easy to watch. It's on HBO Max. You can watch the whole thing now. If you want to binge it, it's all there ready for you to take in.
My binge is going to be The Bureau. I was recommended The Bureau, the French espionage agency thriller by people who were in the business, saying that's the best espionage show since Fauda, and it's like Fauda, it's the real deal. And so I'm going to watch that, sort of binge watch it, but I'll put The Mayor of Easttown down. But you know, Sonny, when do we get summer? They've got to have 2 years of movies ready to release, don't they?
Well, a bunch of those movies have kind of shifted to streaming over the last 12 months. There's another one that shifted to streaming that'll be coming out July 4th weekend, The Tomorrow War, starring Chris Pratt as a man who goes to fight in the future war. It's a very high concept sci-fi movie, the premise of which is people from the future come back from the past to now, to our present, but in their past, saying, hey, we're at war with this alien race, and we are this close to being wiped out. We need to bring people with us to fight them in the future. He goes to fight.
Isn't that the Terminator?
Kind of. It's kind of like a reverse Terminator. You know, they send people to the past to fight the machines. We have to.
So it's basically a
future to fight the machines.
But it's a draft movie. It's about resisting the draft.
Well, I don't think he resists. I think Chris Pratt goes and fights in the Tomorrow War. But A Quiet Place Part Two marked the start of summer, really, with the Memorial Day weekend. But the first big budget action-y spectacle sort of thing is the new Fast and Furious movie. Hitting theaters June 22nd, something like that. It's a Fast and Furious movie, so it is what it is. You'll either like it.
Let me get a question into you about the Bond franchise. Amazon bought MGM for the purpose explicitly of getting hold of the Bond franchise, but the Bond franchise is controlled by a couple of cousins who, for some reason, are in charge of it. What can they do with the Bond franchise that hasn't already been done? I mean, it's $1 billion a movie, right?
Well, that's a very interesting question, Hugh, because the issue with Bond, as you mentioned, is that it is owned in a 50% split partnership with MGM and this company called Eon. Everything or Nothing is what Eon stands for. It's owned by, as you mentioned, a family that has owned Bond essentially for the last 40 or 50 years. And what this means is that they have absolute total script approval over everything. So they can down to the point where they can veto lines in a James Bond movie before the movie gets made. Now this has good things and bad things come with this. Good things, there's a higher level of quality control, you could say. They look at the overall idea of Bond when they are making a decision about whether they want a new movie to come out or whatever. But it's also bad because it limits what they can actually do with the character. You're not likely to see a TV spinoff. You're not likely to see, spinoffs with characters, random bit characters. And again, that's good and bad. There's a reason James Bond hasn't oversaturated the market. There's a reason you don't have an HBO Max James Bond series or a Dr. No prequel or, whatever. The guys who are kind of tasked with minding the flame of James Bond have done a pretty good job of making sure that it's just the movies that you see. And, we can discuss how high the quality of the individual films is, but they are undoubtedly successful, especially, over the last couple of installments. They're doing $1 billion a movie or so, which is, that's what you want from a franchise like this.
But I mean, Amazon gets its money back after 10 Bond movies. That's what I thought. I mean, what an investment.
Bond isn't the only thing in this deal.
I agree.
They get access to an enormous library of MGM titles, though not the whole thing. I mean, as we all know, MGM sold the pre-1984 portion of its library to Ted Turner some years back.
I read a fascinating thing, Sonny. We're out of time, but I read a fact. They get the intellectual property, so they get to do all those spinoffs from all those movies. You got 45 seconds.
They have the rights to, like, RoboCop, for instance. They can make RoboCop sequels. They have the rights to Legally Blonde and that sort of thing. They may still have the rights to the film version of Ruby Slippers and Over the Rainbow. Wizard of Oz. It's in the public domain now, so anybody can make a Wizard of Oz movie, but they have specific things that are in the movie, like the Ruby Slippers, like Somewhere Over the Rainbow, that they can use in any sequel.
Sonny Bunch, thank you. You're never going to make it in radio, though.
Hello, Joe. I'm looking for some excitement in my life, and that's what the poem's about. I always hoped one day to be part of some conspiracy, a scheme where I'd be in the loop, knowing all the inside scoop, a plot or plan that I would hatch and leave notes in a pumpkin patch. Encountering a sexy spy, I would say, "The bird flies high." She'd look directly in my eye. "Yes, it does," she would reply. I think that it would be exciting and fodder for this book I'm writing. Alas, today things are amiss. Conspiracies don't work like this. The proving ground for all these plots are emails and not microdots. Consider now the mainstream press. Their plot has been a big success. They meet at 9 in coffee joints and hand each other talking points containing things you might expect. Who to attack, who to protect. They obfuscate, conceal, distort, agree on what they won't report. The background of some talking head or something dopey Biden said. Some would say my views are dark. I'm daffy, and I miss the mark. Conspiracy? At straws you're groping. These folks are right out in the open. Yes, that's what keeps me up at night. They do it all, and in plain sight. And that's emails. What emails? By Tarzana Joe.
You know, Joe, you automatically get points for a Pumpkin Papers reference.
I thought so. Yes.
That's like if you worked in Hiss somewhere in there, you would have had a 5-star. As okay. It's a 4.5-star review, but I mean a Pumpkin Papers reference. You know, the Steelers fans are going to have. They think it's a recipe.
I think after every poem, you need at least 5 or 6 Googles to figure out. You know, what's,
Joe, are you still a Mets fan?
You know, I was born in the shadow of Shea Stadium. Well, it wasn't there yet. It was born in the shadow of me. But, yeah, of course I love them.
Well, the reason I bring that up is that Dwayne ran into Governor Christie at the governor's conference last week, and he had a message for me, which is, thanks a lot for Frankie Linder. You know, so I... You know, when the Mets fans are blaming me, I really think things have turned against me. Will that poem be posted at TarzanaJoe.com? I sense a conspiracy out there of Mets fans is what I'm getting at.
No, there's no, they can't get together so much as to get somebody to play second base.
So,
it will be posted. No one will stop me. There's no stopping.
And if people need a poem for any reason, they can write you at TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com and your rates are reasonable and your work is efficacious, correct?
Just as you say.
That's just as I say. Look, if you need a poem, America, for any reason whatsoever, TarzanaJoe@Reagan.com. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, you.
I want to remind you that our sponsor is AndrewandTodd.com. There with Sierra Pacific, they lend you money to refinance your house or buy a home or help your son or daughter become investors in real estate by becoming a non-occupying co-borrower. They help senior citizens with reverse mortgage. They help veterans with no money down mortgages. They help you refinance. So if you need to get money out of your house or you need a whole new house, go to AndrewandTodd.com or call them at 888-888-1172. Welcome back, America. Friday morning. It's a great day to begin the weekend early. I am doing that with Senator Bill Hagerty of the great state of Tennessee. Senator, well, you were abroad. I was in Nashville at the Republicans Governor Association. Missed you down there, but what a wonderful city.
It is a great city. It is a great city, Hugh, and great to be back on with you again.
Thank you, and welcome back. You were in Israel. Tell us about it.
You know, it was terribly important, I think, that I be there, Hugh. After 11 days of an onslaught from the terrorist Hamas hitting southern Israel, I felt like it was important for me to be there to show solidarity. You know, they're very concerning messages coming from what I believe is a minority, a small minority in the Democrat Party, but they're very vocal. And they're spewing anti-Semitism, support for terrorists like Hamas, and they're sending a very bad message because they're pulling the entire Democrat Party in a leftward direction. And this is not a partisan issue. America supports Israel, Hugh. If you look at it in Tennessee, whether you're Democrat, Independent, Republican, we support Israel. It was important for me to be there to show that solidarity.
Now, your colleague Lindsey Graham was in front of an Iron Dome facility, and he cut a little video saying, we will resupply Israel with the necessary armaments to make Iron Dome effective. I'm sure you're committed to that, but when does that opportunity arise?
So we met with Secretary of Defense Benny Gantz there, Israeli Secretary of Defense Gantz. Lindsey announced from that meeting that Gantz is going to put together a $1 billion proposal. I think he had it pretty much finished when I met with him. I heard the same number that that Lindsey did. They are getting ready to come back to us to get a complete rebuild, if you will, of their technology, their facility there, because a lot of it was exhausted. They had 4,000 rockets, Hugh. 4,000 rockets sent over from Hamas. Now, what was interesting and what we don't hear reported very much is that they estimate that some 20 to 30% of those rockets that were launched never made it out of Gaza, meaning they fell in Gaza, destroying Palestinian homes, killing Palestinian people. That doesn't seem to get reported. Also, what doesn't seem to get reported is the indiscriminate launching of rockets to Israeli civilian sites. I went and visited a woman's home. Her caretaker died. Her home was demolished. She's in the hospital. This is what Hamas is doing. It's the ultimate act of cowardice. That's what terrorism is. And the fact that people in the Democrat Party are describing it as something differently is just unbelievable.
The Hamas tactics are recognized as a war crime. So they are war criminals, and they ought to be in front of an appropriate tribunal at The Hague. Senator, talk to me, though, about the 10% of the missiles that were not intercepted by Iron Dome. How concerned are the Israelis that they would be overwhelmed if attacked by both Hamas on their south and Hezbollah on their north at the same time? And Hezbollah has much bigger, more potent, more powerful rocketry.
Indeed, Hugh. They are very concerned, and that's why they want to replenish Iron Dome as quickly as possible and expand it, because this was an unprecedented hit from Hamas 11 days straight. Of this war, I would call it, that took place. And Israel does need to be prepared. But let's not lose sight of who's really behind all of this, because you mentioned Hamas, you mentioned Hezbollah. They're both proxies for Iran. And what the Biden administration has done with Iran in terms of embracing them, talking about reentering the failed Iran deal, that, I believe, is what has emboldened these proxies to step up. Iran is what's funding these operations. It's Iranian technology that's underlying rockets that are being launched. Make no mistake, Iran is behind this.
The theocratic regime in Tehran is on the ropes. Three indications. Their uranium enrichment program, as the International Atomic Energy Agency certified, has plummeted since the centrifuge sabotage. Number two, their largest naval vessel sunk in the Gulf of Oman 2 days ago. And yesterday, their largest refinery blew up and burned for 20 hours. Why would we throw them a lifeline right now?
I think this is exactly the time not to, Hugh. You and I see it the same way. The economic sanctions were crippling, and they were working. My friends here in Tennessee who have relatives still living in Tehran tell me this is something that we need to maintain maximum pressure on right now. This is the last time you'd want to turn away. I think Iran was advised to hold on by John Kerry during the Trump administration. Just wait till the Democrats can get in, and we'll give you something better. We need to maintain pressure on Iran right now. As you say, the theocracy that's the largest state sponsor of terror in the world needs to continue to feel the pressure. They're under pressure right now, and we need to maintain it. This is our chance to change Iran for the better for the Iranian people.
Senator, before you, while you were away, I talked to a couple of your old colleagues in the administration, O'Brien and Secretary Pompeo. They told me that one of the diplomatic achievements of the Trump years was to persuade the government of Japan not to buy Iranian oil, because that was a tough hit in Japan, which is dependent on Iranian oil. Do you think Japan will remain resolved in this era of Biden appeasement to continue its position vis-a-vis Iranian imports?
Well, I was deeply involved in making certain that Japan did stop buying Iranian oil. It was a 70-year relationship that Japan had with Iran, Hugh, and as you can imagine, and I'm sure as Mike and Robert told you, it was difficult to get them to do it. They had a waiver in the first instance, and then we asked them to go to zero importation. They reminded me often that they went to war over energy supply at one point, as we all remember. So it was very difficult for them to let go. They want to maintain varied supplies of energy because they have no indigenous energy supply there in Japan. But they did it. A lot of pressure from us, but Japan did it. They're one of the biggest customers of Iran. They stopped buying, crude oil from Iran. That had a big economic impact. Let me tell you what happened, though, after that. Prime Minister Abe told me that he wanted to go and let the Iranian leadership know that personally he was going to end the purchasing, but he wanted to maintain this long-term relationship. So he goes to Tehran and visits with Rouhani in the afternoon. Rouhani is, I don't want to say moderate because none of them are in the leadership, but he is not as hard right as the Ayatollah. So he meets with Rouhani in the afternoon. The next morning when he goes in to meet with the Ayatollah to let him know that they're going to stop purchasing oil, what does the Ayatollah do? They sink two Japanese ships. They sink two Japanese cargo ships while Abe is in meeting with the Ayatollah. These are the type of people that we're dealing with.
I didn't know that incident. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So look, they're thugs.
I will continue
they're
to remind
thugs.
Japan of what they did.
Yeah, they are absolute thugs. The mullahs are thugs. They're murderers. They're killers. And they do supply these rockets to Hamas and to Hezbollah. And we do need to rebuild Iron Dome. Now, it's interesting. You were there in the middle of a political convulsion. the 12-year run of Bibi Netanyahu may be coming to end in 10 days. Benny Gantz will still be the defense secretary, whether or not an interim government remains in place or whether or not a new coalition comes in. So I'm glad you met with Benny Gantz. But how much of your time was given to figuring out who's the players on the scorecard?
You know, that wasn't the primary purpose of our visit, really. I wanted to be there again to show solidarity and to understand and assess the effectiveness of Iron Dome, which was very impressive. But I did want to get a sense of how things stand politically, because Israel is our most important ally in the Middle East. They've been our ally since 1948. And we're going to work with whomever is in the leadership there. But it was very interesting to sit down with Bibi Netanyahu. You know, Bibi and I both worked at the same firm. We both started our careers at a place called the Boston Consulting Group. Both of us were impacted profoundly by the founder of that firm, Bruce Henderson, who himself is a Tennessean and a fellow Vanderbilt alum like myself. So Bibi and I had a lot in common talking about that and the impact that Bruce Henderson had on our thinking about economics and how we've grown our economies in my state of Tennessee and in his state of Israel with a lot of the principles that Bruce had taught us when we worked there many, many years ago. But I saw in Netanyahu a tremendous amount of grit. Whether he is the prime minister or he's the leader of the opposition, he's going to continue to have a strong voice there. And Netanyahu is very clear-eyed about who the greatest threat is, and that is Iran. And Netanyahu has been very clear with us about Iran as well.
I know I want to switch to Tennessee briefly because I got this new affiliate in Sparta and I'm paying a lot of attention. I love Nashville. Right. Governor Lee gave a talk during one of the roundtables with the governor saying that Tennessee has got a whole bunch of people coming in from blue states. I mean, just being flooded by blue states. No income tax. I know a couple of people who graduated from Butler and moved to California, which was, you know, consistent with not really being educated at Butler. And now they're coming to Tennessee, which is a smart move. So my question is, do you expect the politics of Tennessee to change with the arrival of all these blue state people?
Well, I hope not, because I want those blue state people to remember why they came to Tennessee. It's our conservative policies. Tennessee has the strongest balance sheet in the nation because we've had conservative policies. We don't build things until we can pay for them. We don't have any income tax. We've been able to build a very strong business-friendly economy, and in doing so, attract businesses that want to actually succeed and thrive, not live under the weight of massive taxation and massive regulation, which is what's happening in California, Illinois, New Jersey, New York, these states that people are departing in droves. When I talk to them, I remind them, Tennessee is great, Tennessee is attractive because of the policies that we have in place, the conservative policies that we have in place. Don't forget that.
Well, Governor Lee struck me as a very innovative governor, and I'm not sure if your legislature is that innovative as well, but I know charter schools are on the agenda down in Tennessee, and I know that your state is, it's fascinating how quickly it's growing. Because it's been there a long time, but it moved from the Democratic column to the Republican column.
It definitely did. In 2010, Governor Bill Haslam took the state from Phil Bredesen, who was a Democrat, into Republican control. At the time that Bill Haslam became governor, January 2011, Tennessee was in the bottom half on all economic measures. We had higher unemployment, lower GDP per capita, lower wages than the majority of the nation. And in the first 4 years that Bill Haslam was governor and I was serving as the Commissioner of Economic Development, that's the Commerce Secretary here, we turned the state around and got Tennessee humming on all cylinders. And now Tennessee is one of the top states in the nation on every measure, whether it be GDP growth, low unemployment, you name it, Hugh. In fact, By the end of my term as Commerce Secretary, Tennessee had become the number one state in the nation for creating jobs through foreign investment. So this is bringing in more capital from Japan, for example, expanding operations at Nissan, more supply chain, all resident in Tennessee, making our economy thrive.
Well, the biggest export in my world is that you exported Jimmy and Dee Haslam to Cleveland, where they bought the Browns and were going to the Super Bowl. So I'm all for the Tennessee export business. Senator, good to talk to you. Welcome home. Good to have you back. And thank you for the update on the situation in Israel. Brought to you by ReliefFactor.com. $19.95 gets you started on ReliefFactor.com. I talk about it three times in my daily show. At the bottom of the first hour when I take it, and then in hours two and three when I remind you to take it, depending on when your commute begins, because ReliefFactor.com works. It's the only supplement I've taken in 30 years of broadcasting. I've declined every other opportunity to take a supplement, and I'll tell you why. Because ReliefFactor.com actually works. I carry in Curcumin and Resveratrol Omega, temporary relief for the relief of minor aches and pains, temporary support for the relief of minor aches and pains, and you can't do better than that 3-week starter pack, $19.95.